Welcome to the Leaders in Payments podcast, where we talk to C-level leaders from across the payments landscape. We'll be discussing the products and services that impact the payment space today, as well as trends and predictions for the future of payments. We will also hear stories from our guests about their journeys to the top.
Merchants are looking to future-proof their payment strategies in the midst of this commoditization, in the midst of this plethora of different payment methods that they want to capitalize on, in the midst of a decreasing appetite for risk, and the presence of value adds on the payments chain. So you combine all these things together and you create a very compelling hypothesis around why orchestration has to exist in the market and why orchestration, in my mind, will be powering the future of payments for some time to come.
That was Rob Lincoln, a self-proclaimed left-handed homeschooled Tasmanian who currently moonlights as the founder and CEO of Paydoc. Rob is our special guest this week on episode 122 of the Leaders in Payments podcast, and I'm your host, Greg Myers. Growing up on an island off the coast of Australia in a family that traveled extensively, Rob has a widespread cultural background with global exposure. This, coupled with his extensive industry experience, has afforded him a rather unique perspective on people, progress, and most importantly, payments. Rob's vision of a company that not only solved problems but provided value has gone through many iterations that have been, in his words, rewarding, terrifying, and exhilarating. The most recent manifestation of this is Paydoc. Founded in 2015, Paydoc is a payments orchestration platform that helps medium and enterprise merchants simplify their increasingly complex payment stack. According to Rob, there are four emerging trends in the payments ecosystem that are already impacting the marketplace and will require us to future-proof our payment strategy for successful forward momentum. We've got a great episode today, so let's get started. Hi, Rob. Thank you for being here and welcome to the Leaders in Payments podcast.
Hi, Greg. Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. So we're going to dive in right now and we're going to talk about your professional journey in a minute. But to get started, if you don't mind, tell our audience a little bit about yourself, maybe where you grew up, where you went to school, where you currently live, a few things like that.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. I often tell people, not always VCs, but people who know me better, that I'm a left-handed homeschooled Tasmanian. So I was born in Tasmania, which is an island off the coast of Australia. It is part of Australia, as much as they would like to be independent. And our family traveled a lot. So I had the opportunity to be homeschooled and experience a lot of things that many kids growing up don't in terms of cultures and experiences, which was a real blessing, actually. And so that mix of travel and growing up in a more rural part of Australia gave me, you know, a very interesting perspective on the world and a lot of experiences I'm very thankful for.
Okay. And where do you currently live?
I currently live in London, like many other Australians.
Okay, great. Well, let's dive in and talk about Paydoc. So tell the audience what Paydoc does.
Yeah, so Paydoc has become known as a payments orchestration platform. That's a technical term that not many people are yet familiar with. But what a payments orchestration platform does is we help medium and large merchants simplify their increasingly complex payment stacks. So if I'm a large retailer or platform, I will have come to the conclusion over the last couple of years that I can't do single vendor anymore. I need to work with multiple vendors at once. The market has shifted to a point where I have to interoperate. I have to be flexible. The market's breaking up in some really interesting ways, which I'm sure we'll talk about. And I want to be able to capitalize on that. So after 5, 6, maybe even 7 years of working in the market as a consultant, we realized that there was a significant gap opening up. And after seeing the pain firsthand, ourselves decided to do something about it. And that was the genesis of Paydoc. So payments orchestration platforms are a bit of a new thing. A lot of the market's still deciding what exactly that means. But for us at Paydoc, it simply means removing a lot of the risk and cost out of sophisticated payment strategies through a single platform.
Okay. Are there certain verticals that you focus on, or is it really just any mid-sized to enterprise-sized company?
Yeah, we do tend to focus on a couple of verticals. Our genesis was actually solving these kind of problems, not-for-profit space. So I did a lot of consulting globally in the charity sector. And, you know, if you're a charity, all you do is payments. So anywhere there's a bit of friction or a bit of pain, you really feel it. And personally, as an industry I was really passionate about, I would see good mum and dad donor dollars being washed away through payments administration, compliance, inefficient payment systems, inability to engage the donor. And as we dug into the central problem, which is, you know, that single vendor payment strategies don't work anymore, we saw that this was not just a problem in the impact sector, but it was also a problem that existed in retail. It was a problem that existed in insure tech, in platforms, in online travel agencies. Almost everywhere we looked, this problem existed, more acutely felt at the top end of town. So trying to introduce a new idea to organizations who are slower moving and more established, it has been part of our growing story. But certainly the market has come to a point where they're like, yes, we really need payments orchestration now. And I think where we're seeing the market really respond is in the bigger end of town retail sector, and then sort of moving into these sort of adjacent verticals such as online travel, impact, and marketplace platforms.
Okay. And does the payment orchestration solution cover both online or e-commerce transactions and physical in-person transactions?
Yes, it does, Greg. The market is certainly heading in that direction. The pain point, if we have to narrow it right down, is in e-commerce right now. But what we're seeing is that once merchants take an orchestration-first approach to payments, if they're a retailer, a traditional brick-and-mortar retailer who has a substantial online presence, then they will rapidly turn around and say, okay, that's great, you've cleaned up everything in the back office in our digital environments. Now let's look at consolidating customer data from over-the-counter transactions. Let's look at QR code, phone-based, consumer-driven trends. Let's look at how we innovate the front of house, not just the e-commerce properties. So we're seeing a clear trend in that direction right now.
And what are some of the challenges that you're solving for? So maybe a use case or an example of a customer. You don't have to name the customer, but maybe an example of sort of the problem. Is it multiple payment methods? Is it wanting to offer different solutions to different customers? Is it different countries, different currencies? What are the types of problems you typically face?
Yeah, so the problems that we typically face and the problems that we see are most prevalent in market related to four trends and the problems that come out of them. So let me just talk about the trends that we see, and then specifically on the ground, you know, I can relate that to some of our customers' experiences. So the four trends are commoditization. It's no secret that transaction fees are in a race to the bottom, and that payment service providers are looking for other ways to generate value. And we see this where we've got alternative payment methods, such as, you know, faster payments in the UK and other account-to-account payment methods starting to compete more directly with the schemes and processing payments as fast at a much lower rate. And the other thing is that we've got a lot of commoditization even of the processes themselves. There's literally hundreds of acquirers around the world now for acquiring credit card transactions. And how do you as a merchant differentiate between them, if not by price now? So we're seeing sort of this race to the bottom on fees due to alternative ways of processing payments that are becoming commonly accepted by the consumer as the infrastructure is rolled out. And then we're seeing a lot of commoditization from this, simply the number of vendors available at more traditional processing. So there's that commoditization effect has in many regards paralyzed merchants, because they will look at going with one provider and then they'll find out that there's another one that's a little bit cheaper, or they may want to be able to benefit from some arbitrage between different providers based on, as you say, currency or card scheme or other variables. So they're not a potential for disintermediation. Rather, it's an imperative from the merchant who says, hey, I want to capitalize on this new dynamic of commoditization. The second thing that we've seen in the market is that merchants want to have all the things. They want their buy now, pay later. They want their alternative payment methods. They want their local acquirers, and they want to have them all, but they don't want to do the work. And so fantastic payment service providers like Stripe have educated the market around what a fantastic developer experience looks like. And the market doesn't want to retreat from that, but they still want all the things, and they still want their independence, and they want their flexibility, and they want access to customer data, and they don't want to be locked into a corner, largely due to that first problem that I was talking about. So we see merchants saying, hey, I want to exploit the race to the bottom. I want to have all the things but never get locked into a corner. And while I'm doing that, I want to close out big compliance gaps, because compliance and risk is growing more expensive by the day. You know, if you've ever tried to get cyber insurance or these things, you'll know that the digital risk is something that merchants are looking to offload. And then the final vector is really around the value adds in the industry. So there's, you know, machine learning driven fraud platforms entering the market. There's actionable insights platforms that you can plug into your payment stream. You want to dynamically link with your cloud-based accounting platform. You know, these kind of third-party value adds, merchants want to be able to plug those in without having to re-plug them in for every new vendor they engage. So they want to do that once and have it forever, like future-proof their strategy. So I think that's a key word. Merchants are looking to future-proof their payment strategies in the midst of this commoditization, in the midst of this plethora of different payment methods that they want to capitalize on, in the midst of a decreasing appetite for risk and the presence of value adds on the payments chain. So you combine all these things together and you create a very compelling hypothesis around why orchestration has to exist in the market and why orchestration, in my mind, will be powering the future of payments for some time to come.
Okay. I appreciate you walking through that, because it really helps kind of crystallize what problem you're solving. So thanks for doing that. Just curious, so do you have a direct sales force that you go to market with, or through partnerships? How do you go to market?
We do both. We both go directly to market and we work with partners. As the founder of Paydoc, we've sort of had to do everything at one point in time. And if you've ever read, I think it was Greg Moore's Crossing the Chasm, that's a real Bible for B2B SaaS. He describes the process very well. And he says, look, for any innovative proposition in market, you're going to have to establish those beachheads, and you have to do that the hard way. And we absolutely had to take it, go the hard way. Payments is a 5-9s, highly available trust proposition as much as it's anything else. And if you're a new startup originally from Australia, how are you going to cross that trust bridge? So we had to start a journey by clawing our way to the table. A lot of that was done by pounding the pavement, you know, knocking on doors, explaining the proposition, explaining the benefits. And we got quite good at that. So we certainly have generated a lot of our own steam through a direct sales channel. Increasingly, as the market's shifted, payment service providers and large merchants are looking to partners to close the gaps that they have. We're shifting into a more distributed model, but we're going to continue both for a long time. We always want to stay very close to the problem and close to merchant customers. And so I don't see that changing anytime soon, that we'll have both streams.
Okay. And how big is the company right now?
In terms of headcount, we're in a rapid scaling phase. Right now, we're north of 50 people. But ask me the same question again in 12 months, and it might be a very different answer.
Okay. What would you say differentiates your company from your competitors out there?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, we do have a secret sauce, which is a reason why you would work with Paydoc as opposed to working with some of the few genuine orchestration platforms out there. And I do stress genuine, because since really late 2018, when orchestration became a term in the market, and, you know, a lot of the tier one VCs started looking at it and the whole thing sort of lit up, a lot of people jumped on the bandwagon and were saying, oh, we do orchestration. There's no we do orchestration. And I think there's a bit of a pile on in terms of trying to define the agenda about what is orchestration, even while it's a generally understood principle, and who are the standout brands. So what differentiates us from genuine orchestration, and genuine orchestration solves those four problems that I spoke about earlier: commoditization, alternative payment methods, value adds, and risk compliance. Those four things. What differentiates us from our competitors is a few things. And I think the first is that we're actually really experienced at it. We've been doing this for a long time. So as some of our new competitors come up through the market, they're going to learn a lot of the lessons that we've learned a few years ago while what we're doing didn't have a name. And so that means that when the market comes to vendor A versus Paydoc, we're able to say, oh, yeah, no, we solved that problem this way. Oh, yeah, we do that this way. And we have these solutions built on the back of a lot of feedback from the market over the years. And the second thing is that we're really customer focused. And I know everyone says that, but when you think about the great payment companies over the years, actually the great companies, but hey, we're talking payments today. Stripe, for example, like John and Pat, they were not from the payments industry. They were from the problem. They were very close to the merchant. And when I think about the genesis of Paydoc, to our benefit and our customers' benefit, we were not from the industry. We spent years in the trenches with our customers trying to solve these problems until we basically felt forced to build this product Paydoc to solve this problem because no one was solving it correctly in our mind. So we're very experienced, very customer, very close to the merchant, close to the problem. And I think these two things together, the experience and the customer focus, separate us from our competitors. And we're seeing that. We're seeing that in the market as well as we go out there and we talk shop and describe the problem and our team. But there is one other comment I'll make. I think from our experience, we've been able to field a very mature team. So ex-PayPal product managers, ex-MasterCard team leads. We have, you know, very deep payments experience coming in now. Arguably one of the more experienced teams in the world, I'd say. And that's going to fuel us through the next phase of growth, I think, both in terms of credibility and leadership, you know, and that's on the back of our experience and our customer focus. So I put those three things together and I'll happily step into the ring.
Great. So we didn't touch on this, but I think it's important. Is it a global solution? So are you in all markets or just specific ones today?
We are a global solution. So we have customers in almost every continent, not always significant traction in every continent. I think different markets and geographies, payments, environments are maturing in different ways. But Paydoc is we're a global, you know, global day one proposition. I think we had the benefit of being able to cut our teeth under the radar in the Aussie market for the first few years, but now headquartered in London with a significant presence in APAC and an increasing presence in Europe and the US.
Hey everyone, this is your host Greg Myers, and as many of you already know, October is Financial Inclusion Month, and we're going to be talking about all of the products, services, and ways that the payments and fintech industry help support the underbanked and unbanked. Be on the lookout for the first episode, October the 6th. A special thanks to our title sponsors, The Clearinghouse and PaySafe Cash, as well as our principal sponsor, Instant Financial. Now, back to the show. So you mentioned the four trends that you talked about, but where do you see the payments industry heading in the next couple of years, say 2 to 3 years?
Yeah, really, really good question. Where do we see the payments industry heading? I remember when we were getting our teeth kicked in by every VC we ever spoke to, you know, 4 years ago, 5 years ago. We were told that, you know, we were going to get steamrolled by Stripe and that the industry was going to consolidate and that you couldn't escape the gorillas. They were just going to eat everybody and everything and it would be a winner-takes-all market. And we had, you know, 180 degrees opposite hypothesis, which might explain why it was challenging in those early years. Our hypothesis was that the market would fragment, and that was because the rise of open APIs, the changes in regulation that were going to empower BNPLs and APMs and everything that we're seeing today, and because we were seeing, you know, more and more value adds starting to come in around the periphery. And we're like, there has to be a marketplace type solution that can glue all this together. There has to be, because the fragmentation is going to get worse, the commoditization is going to accelerate, and merchants are going to want to capitalize. And so we sort of pitched our puck. We tried to skate to where the puck was going, not where it was. And I don't see that fragmentation and commoditization pace slowing down. You might come back to me and say, yeah, but look, Square just bought Afterpay, and we see these consolidation effects. But that's, you know, a tip of the iceberg, the way I see it. You know, you look at the rate at which fintech is entering the market, and every 5 minutes there's a new something or other. And I think the Pandora's box has been open for a lot of merchants. And once they see the value and sense of taking an agnostic orchestration first approach to building our payment strategy, I think that's actually going to enable further fragmentation and further commoditization. Because if you make it easy for participants in the economy to participate and remove those old challenges of technical integration friction and back-end office, you know, processes, et cetera, such as we do, you facilitate further dynamic in the payments industry. You create a platform for new entrants to enter faster than ever before. So I think if you look at some of the headlines, you might think it's consolidating. Honestly, I think we're in for another 3 to 5 years of very exciting ride around new products, new fragmentation, new opportunities. The race to the bottom is going to continue. We're going to see the schemes reaching out to try and acquire or work with account-to-account providers, Visas, attempt to acquire Plaid or Plaid, depending on where you live, is a good example of that. And, you know, it was no surprise that there was the pivot around their activity in Europe. And I think we'll see more of that as the schemes become more comfortable with some of these alternative rails that are available and seek to protect their markets as well. But from the merchant perspective, the merchant wants to participate in all of the above. So whether the parent body is a single company or not, from the merchant perspective, there's still lots of different interfaces. So we have to separate, I think, corporate consolidation from sort of a market level dynamic. So that my pitch is that it's going to continue to be a very wild and exciting ride for the merchant. And I hope we're around to help and maybe even to facilitate it.
Yeah, I think that's a great perspective. And I find it interesting. I feel like some of the old is new again, right? I mean, buy now, pay later existed with Bill Me Later many, many years ago and kind of disappeared. And then here we are, whatever it's been, 10 years later. And, you know, it's one of the hottest topics in payments. And, you know, so there's the, and even like QR codes, right? Who would have thought, like, at least here in the US, you see people in restaurants still, they use QR codes to get menus. And so they're familiar with them now and they'll use them for payments. And, you know, that's something that's been around for a long time. And that may be driven by sort of COVID and the pandemic, but it's still happening. So I think there's a lot of kind of way you put it, fragmentation in the industry. And I think, yes, there's consolidation, but I think there's so many new solutions, so much money being invested in fintech and payments that it's just going to continue.
Well, you look at that's right, exactly. You look at where the money's going and see that as a, you know, a leading indicator of what's ahead. The money alone, let alone the underpinning, you know, regulatory or technical environments that are facilitating this rapid acceleration and fragmentation. I think one illustration I could use is it's like a buffet bar and, you know, merchants are going to want to put together their different recipes, or maybe a supermarket, and merchants are going to want to bake their own cakes based on their unique consumer profile, unique product offerings, and they're going to want that flexibility. And we're going to see, you know, niche providers spring up to service those niche propositions as well. So it's an exciting time ahead. One thing you mentioned, QR codes. So what I've found absolutely fascinating is that QR codes have gone from this, at least in the West, strange cousin in the corner to the must have. I'm annoyed if I don't have a QR code to help me do my thing, whether it's at checkout or read a menu at a restaurant. And then if we're using a QR code to that, wouldn't it also make sense to use a QR code to instantly trigger a payment and I don't have to walk up to the till? Or, you know, who knows what kind of value added payment experiences can be created when you look at that sort of fourth principle that I talked about. And the QR code falls into that fourth category. And we're seeing merchants say, well, I want to do this thing with the QR code that talks to this kind of payments vault and triggers this kind of workflow. And that works for my business. And then the next merchant will say, well, I want to do it this way with a BNPL. And so everybody has their own sort of cocktail or recipe they want to make. And I think the exciting thing about fintech today is that all the ingredients are on the table. The question is, how do you make it work in an efficient and future-proof kind of way? I mean, that's the tantalizing question, I think.
Yeah. I think that you're in a great position to help companies with that challenge. And even, you know, with the mid-size and large companies, I would assume there's a lot of old technology that you have to deal with, and in integrating these would be a huge challenge, take millions of dollars and a year to integrate something. But with your solution, obviously, I think that changes the dynamics.
Yeah, look, I can talk about that from experience. So we've had, you know, large merchants say, look, you've taken an 18-month multi-million dollar project and turn it into a 3-month sort of rollout. That's the kind of power, I think, of orchestration done well. And I'm not saying we're perfect and we've got a long way to go ourselves. And, you know, our merchants are our most valuable asset, both in terms of feedback as well and how we can improve what we're doing. And one thing I love about, you know, our approach is once merchants go, oh, yeah, I can do it this way, there, you know, the market itself is pushing us to be better at what we do and to do it faster at greater scale. So I love the participation of the market in solving this problem. We're all agreed on the problem, and that creates a really exciting set of high quality problems for us to solve. The shift from single vendor to multi-vendor has been, I think, a paradigm shift in thinking for merchants that's really occurred over the last sort of 2 years. And I think coronavirus goes without saying that it's accelerated that.
Absolutely. Well, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about you. So maybe rewind a little, tell us about your professional journey, what led up to you founding the company, and give us a little overview of your background.
Yeah, my background sort of emerging from Tasmania, my professional journey started with founding a small digital agency focused on, as I said, the impact sector. And we were looking at the payments problems and digital experience problems that were sort of flushing money down the toilet for a lot of brands who were doing really good things. And I remember in university thinking, you know, I really hate it that amazing charities are so poor at innovation and so poor at telling their stories online and poor at engaging people. You know, maybe I can do something about that. And so I started a small agency focused on just solving these problems, you know, on a case-by-case basis. And on that particular journey, we saw an opportunity to build a data and analytics platform that consolidated a lot of the online, I guess, behavioral data, and through those behavioral metrics, create customized donation and payment experiences that, I guess, incentivize the donor to increase their giving if they're a repeat donor, and did some really cool stuff. And actually, we filed a patent for that, and we got beaten to the post by a large card scheme. But it was a very innovative product, but it never got off the ground because we couldn't get the payments data from all the banks and the gateways. And, you know, we went to all the gateways, the payment gateways, and we went to all the banks and we said, look, what about APIs? What about this? Don't you see Stripe's coming? What about Braintree? Do you see that as being a risk to your business? And they were like, no, Stripe's not going to be a thing. Braintree's not a threat. Very comfortable in their incumbency. And I look back on those conversations and I recall them like it was yesterday and think about how quickly the market has in fact actually moved. But that never got off the ground. And so my journey has been one of a moderate to low success in the agency to no success in this analytics platform. But we learned a lot. And the more that we looked at both the problem I had trying to build this analytics platform and the problem I saw on the ground, increasingly now, as I mentioned, not just in the impact sector, but in the retail sector and the work we did there around payments, I actually sort of said, look, the real problem in the world today, at least online, is payments. And would it be possible to build a payments company that solved these problems these complex problems in an elegant and efficient way? And potentially itself, that company had substantial impact. So, you know, I believe that companies themselves, one of the best ways to do good in the world. And I was very inspired by Melanie Perkins in Forbes recently, talking about Canva's recent raise. And she said, you know, I think the concept of hoarding wealth is one of the most uninspiring things you could ever do, you know. And I think as a generation now, we want our companies to be oriented around having a substantial impact in the world. And having seen firsthand the shortfalls in justice and stewardship of our planet and everything else, actually one of the best things you can do in life is build a monumental F-off business that is designed to do good. So we've progressed from sort of Google's mantra, which is do no evil, to I think something that's a lot more positive now, which is intentionally do good. And we're having so many more values-based conversations in the market. I know it's strange to talk about values in payments, but you know, payments is not agnostic and everything has values. You can't escape values. So I think the opportunity to solve a very large, very complex problem elegantly at scale was intoxicating. The ability to maybe do that while also supporting organizations who represent our better selves in the universe was also, you know, very exciting. And then naively, I thought, well, how hard can it be? And if I was to say what my journey to being, you know, CEO and founder has been, you know, the prevailing emotion is being a founder and a CEO is like dancing on stage naked while everyone's watching and having a strong opinion about you. That is exactly what it feels like. You're constantly learning on the job. And I have to just, you know, stay so humble because I have a long way to go. We all have a long way to go. But I think if I'm not humbler and more resilient day by day, then I won't be, you know, the person the company needs in the coming years as well. So there's not a lot of room for pride. I look forward to seeing Payroll grow to become like our heroes in the payment space. But I remember somebody once said, a leader is someone who steps first. And I think that's true. A good leader has to step first, whether it's apologizing if you've done something wrong, resolving differences in the team, carefully watching the culture, making sure it doesn't go toxic or the tension, friction doesn't grow where it shouldn't, steps first in terms of managing risk, for the team because you've got a lot of people looking to you for their livelihood. So it's been a very evolving journey from going, how hard can it be, which let me tell you is very, through to an enormous privilege, which I don't take for granted because there's been so many times when Paydoc shouldn't have existed because of mistakes I've made. Timing is a big thing as well in markets. You could argue we were too early. You could argue we were underfunded. You could argue 100 different things. But I think the difference is whether you believe in what you're doing and whether you quit when it gets really hard. And, you know, by God's grace, we've been able to not quit, I think. And that's, as Steve Jobs said, you know, when Steve Jobs went back to Apple, I think it was in 98, it was a bit of a crisis. He said, we're going to survive our way out of this. I think survival is 9/10 of the law for the first 5 years of any startup. So just by surviving, we've been able to accumulate the experience and establish the beachhead required to take this to the next level. And that's a great privilege.
Great. Well, thanks for all that explanation. And question, so what are you passionate about? So maybe one thing on the business side that you have a great passion for and one on the personal side.
You know, Greg, I'm passionate about two things, which is really one thing. I think the one thing is people. You never go further than the relationships in your life. And what is it that we're actually doing at the end of the day? What is the fundamental value of a business or of doing anything at all? And the question I've been thinking through recently is, why do anything? You know, I think that's an interesting question for all of us. And if I look at the business and the value it generates, at the end of the day, it's about helping businesses or charities better connect with their consumers or their donors. And on the other hand, it's about internally at Paydoc, you know, maturing the next generation of leaders in payments and giving people the opportunity to grow and mature and be their best selves through a work environment and through the kind of culture that can foster their own professional and personal development. So I think we want to work for companies that do good in the world. So we are selective about who we work for and there's certain markets we don't service. And at the same time, internally, we want to mature our team to be the leading global best practitioners in payments. And then at the same time, you know, as a company, as we become increasingly profitable, it's like, we actually want to ourselves do good in the world. And ultimately, it comes down to people. So things that we care about tangibly, justice, the environment. We're in the process of becoming a B Corp because that represents willingness by our shareholders and the management to be accountable to our values. And all of that, I think, really does come down to people. I know it's a strange thing for a payments company to say, but you have to look like what's actually behind the curtain and what's driving the organization. And I think for us, it's the person next to you in the team, looking at them, believing the best in them, helping create a forum for them to excel, and then underpinning a set of brands that themselves are doing good in the world and providing, you know, meaningful, tangible value. Even retail businesses are a critical part of the economy, and we want to help them not suffocate in payments administration, technical costs. We want to help them manage their risk around exposing their consumer data to the dark web and things like that. So there's all things that we do that impact people at the end of the day. So no man is an island, no company is an island, and we don't think we are either. And no company should think that. I think we want to be a leader among a next generation of companies in the world that are aligned around a set of values. And I think if we can do that, like Canva, who received 180,000 job applications in the last 12 months, you know, we will see the marketplace actually orient around these companies because I think this is a generation of people who aren't satisfied with the previous status quo and want to actually proactively do good. So look, that's a bit about what we're passionate about. For me, I don't see a disconnect between what I do personally and the values we express in Paydoc. It's all one and the same. And I think that level of integrity is really important for a long-term vision in a business.
Okay. As a good segue into sort of the next question, which is about people. So what advice would you give someone that's just coming out of college or just starting their career in payments? What would you tell them that they need to do to be successful?
Yeah. Look, if you wanted to start up in payments in fintech, if you can stop me from crying or laughing, I would say do it and don't quit. Never quit because you never know what's on the other side of that door and the door of not quitting, that is. And recently someone said to me, success is like walking down a hallway of doors with opportunities to exit at any point in time. But what you actually want, you know, is the door at the end of the hallway. I thought that was a beautiful picture. And to anybody wanting to start, I'd say, look, it might not be the first thing you do. It might not be the second thing you do. It might not even be the fourth thing you do. But each time you dust the knees off, you're that much more resilient. You're that much more humble. You're that much stronger. You're that much more better equipped to outpace your competitors. And so, you know, I think one of the worst things that can happen to a startup is they're too successful too early, or the first VC says yes. And I think you'll find out so much about yourself and others as well, by the way. You really learn who your friends are big time. And I think as humans, we owe it to ourselves often to try, because you begin to discover your own potential that you didn't know existed. And you'll have nights where you just, like me, you know, I've had nights where I just don't sleep and stare at the ceiling till the sun comes up, wondering what the hell am I actually doing, and why am I putting my family through this, and why am I back in my mum's garage again? You know, you have these kind of moments. But it is one of the most rewarding and exhilarating and terrifying experiences. And Elon really captured it well when he said, you know, it's like chewing glass and staring into the abyss. That is absolutely the feeling. But I would encourage anyone to do it and be prepared for one of the most incredible journeys of self-discovery. And you might just inspire and help a few people along the way, and potentially, you know, if we break through, do some good at scale, which I think is enormously rewarding. And I remember, you know, I didn't want to just fill in spreadsheets at a big four accounting for my life. And I think a lot of people share that desire to do good at scale and to do something new. And the best way to do that is to start something new. So if anybody wants to ask me questions on how to capital raise or how to do this, you know, I'm more than available. I'd love to encourage somebody on that journey if they're interested in taking it.
Okay, great, great. Well, Rob, we've covered a lot of ground about you and your journey, about the company, about your view on the industry and where it's heading. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
Yeah, let me say two things. It's funny, Greg, because we're talking about payments. We've spent a lot of time talking about, I think, culture and values, which I think is the right conversation, by the way. But you mentioned competitive differentiators. And the other thing I didn't mention was culture, I think. Invest in people is never a bad investment. A product is a point in time, but it's a team that will carry you through to the destination. And, you know, that's been a real mantra of mine. I haven't always been successful at it, and I'll never be perfect at it. But culture is something that I think matters in the next generation of payments companies. I think the other thing is, for entrepreneurs that I failed to mention, was I would encourage not to spend too much time on social media. If you're like me, you're reading LinkedIn, and like me, most of it's payments related, and you're like, oh man, these guys are crushing it. Oh, these guys are doing this and this is that. Like, it just becomes so overwhelming. You're like, I am such a failure compared to this big M&A activity and everything right there. So I think finding a really clear problem and focusing enough to solve it while looking after the people to your left and your right is actually the fundamentals of a really resilient business. And then as the market shifts and as competitors enter and things change, you'll have the capacity to be able to respond to that. Like, that's what I'm aiming at as CEO of Paydoc now. I think being positioned then to capitalize on the changing winds in payments that are happening right now, I honestly think it's one of the most exciting times that have ever existed in payments. You know, a company like Paydoc is well positioned to succeed. And I hope lots of others come in to start solving this problem. I'm sure they will, to act as running mates to us. You know, we could talk for hours about the difference between authentication and authorization and what that means from NFC devices in phones and all this kind of stuff. Maybe a conversation for another day. But if I was to leave any closing comments, you know, I would just leave it at payments world is in one of its most exciting phases we've ever seen right now. And I think the way to add value in that space happens on a foundation of culture and values as much as it does on whether I've chosen to use .NET or Java. Product is a point in time, but it's the people that are going to drive it. And people are now orienting themselves around value-based conversations. So that's what I'm interested to explore in the market for the next few years, saying what actually matters. Sure, the problem's good to solve, but why are we actually solving it in the first place? What do we care about? I can't wait to sit on a few panels with a few other fintechs and ask them that question.
Well, I think that's a great way to wrap up the show. So, Rob, thank you so much for being on the show. I know your time is very valuable, so I want to be sensitive to that. So thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me, Greg. It's been a real genuine honor and privilege.
Yeah, thank you so much. And to all you listeners out there, I thank you for your time as well. And until the next story.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Leaders in Payments podcast. Make sure you visit our website at leadersinpayments.com, where you can subscribe to the show and where you'll find our show notes. If you enjoyed listening, please share on your social channels as well.